I was just thinking, you know, as we bump into people and see people that you haven't seen for a few years or you don't only see once a year, if somebody had told you 40 years ago or 50 years ago that you would be here in this setting, that your life would have these this environment, you would say, I don't think you could write a book that would describe. So you understand how difficult prophecy is. It is a proof of God. But it is a privilege to be here. We had a good evening last night. Am I on here? I don't know whether you, okay. You never know about sound men. You've got some great sound people here, and you don't want to make the AV people angry. A few years ago, I was getting ready for something like this, and I walked into the restroom, thankfully, just to wash my hands. And as I was coming out, my son came running in, and he said, Dad, Dad, the microphone's on. So you never know. I'll tell you, I had to trust Jeff a lot. He said, now the microphone is, they'll handle it back there. I said, are you sure, Jeff? Do you promise? that has happened more than one time. So you realize that you have to be careful. You got to be careful. And you can have conversations. So we're sitting there talking to somebody and something is said that's going out over in another room that's being said someplace else. And you want to... all kinds of things to be careful about. Generally, I just turn that thing off. Okay. Of all of the miracles in the Bible, and there are a bunch, one of the most significant is bringing the Israelites out of slavery, out of Egypt. Now, can you imagine? Here's 2.5 million people, and they're in slavery to an Egyptian pharaoh and to the Egyptian people. And you could go up on a pyramid and you could work out in that hot sun all day long, like being a student at Big Sandy, you know, at the college a few years ago. Some of us can recall that in the summer, out mowing the grass or doing something like that. And the 10 miracles, it was inevitable. I mean, you could not look at this any other way than a divine intervention by God Himself. For what purpose? There is something in the mind of God that is fundamental to your life, to eternity, and to human beings in general. And so you have all the way from the Nile changing from water to blood, all the way down to the death of the firstborn. Is God serious about this? And does He hold other countries accountable for what they've done? Or is it only for the Jews? Is it only for Christians? Is this a universal concept? You know, in the Egyptian language, there is no word, there was no word for freedom. It didn't exist. Now, the irony is that cats were very important to the Egyptians. Now, I don't understand that. Even in the 21st century, you know, there's a little problem I have with that. But cats were so important. You know why? They would catch mice. Now, if you've ever worked on a farm, cats are really good to have around because those mice are running around. You ever been down to New Orleans at the on the dock? Those mice are as big as dogs. I'm telling you, when they start running around, you want to get out of the way. So that thing's bigger than my firstborn, you know. They are huge, and they carry diseases. And there are fleas. You know, the biggest enemy of mankind in a physical sense? Fleas? Close. There are 115 trillion of these enemies. They are mosquitoes. Mosquitoes carry those diseases. They're the conduit. And without them, you wouldn't have to worry about most mosquitoes. And we're coming up in a situation right now in various cities on our border areas that are The Black Plague has already started. We've got incredible plagues that are beginning. And anyway, I don't want to get into that. But cats were important to the Egyptians. Human beings were not. You could die working out there in that sun. It's okay. But a cat, we got to take care of that cat. And God came along and he said to these people, you're going to have freedom from work. Not just one day, but one day every week, you're going to have freedom from work. You do not go to, can you imagine that? Here are these slaves who have been out there toiling and working with whips sometime, told what time to get up in the morning, told what time to go to bed at night, told what clothes they could wear, who they could worship, what they could say, the words they could use, a politically correct police. And here comes this God along and he says, you will not work one day every week. This incredible concept. Not only that, he said, you're going to go 3 days' journey out into the wilderness and you're going to worship me for a week. I want to think that may have been the Feast of Tabernacles. I know Passover and all of that, but the plagues came before they left. There was a period of time that existed before they came out, actually came out and kept Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread. So possibly it was the Feast of Tabernacles that God would say to these slaves, leave this place. I want you to go rejoice. It's a command that you rejoice. What kind of a God is this anyway? That you have to do this. This is different than any God the Egyptians had ever thought of or heard of. There are two nations in the history of this world to embrace freedom as a fundamental concept for mankind and the rights of the individual. They are Israel under the judges. And when you read 1 Samuel 8, and he talks about what these king, what kings will do to you, I want to be your king. I want you to be free. But if you have to choose this human being to be your king, you know what he's going to do? He's going to take your property. He's going to take the best of your laborers. He's going to take your daughters to work in a, you know, as preparing food. He's going to take your sons, and they're going to take care of his cattle, his land. So one of the concepts of freedom is you have the right to own property. And God is saying, I give you that right. In the founding of this country, one of the fundamental concepts was you have the right to own property. And the King of England, who would say, see that house in Philadelphia? You walk down in Philadelphia, you go through some of those houses that existed at that time. They would be taxed on how many steps led up to their front door. If you had two or more steps, you know, I'm choosing some arbitrary numbers here, then you're going to be taxed at a higher level. So you'd find they don't have many steps. How many window panes do you have in the front of that house? So you might find have few window panes in front of your house. You have a lot. What does the King of England have to do with how many windows you have in your house? God said, I want you to be able to make a choice. So the second country is the United States of America. In the history of this world, there's never been a time where 56 men came together in a room and hammered out a document to establish the way a country would be governed until this country came along. Now, with Israel, you could say there was a document hammered out in the third heaven by angels. So two countries. Now, there's a problem with the hammering out of that document. What was the fundamental essential problem that occurred after the hammering out of that document in the founding of this country when it concerns freedom? Slavery. How can you have a country that has slaves, when you are based at your core foundation on freedom. This is so contradictory. Here I have led you people out of Egypt. I made you free, and then you turn and make other people slaves. So, 87 years later, Abraham Lincoln delivered a short speech, 2 minutes long, and it sort of happened like this. Well, it did happen like this. I wouldn't lie to you. Well, maybe just to anyone, you know. This great battle was fought at Gettysburg, and the governor of Pennsylvania, some time later, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, something later, he walks out across this battlefield, and you know what he sees? The bodies of dead soldiers. You know, soldiers in the, if you were a wife during the Civil War or the Revolutionary War, they didn't have people to run back and say, hey, we're sorry to tell you, Miss Jones, but your husband was killed in the battle of whatever. No. In some cases, those people would set up a dinner table, and they would leave that dinner table open, that spot, and it would stay open for months, sometimes after the war ended, waiting for husband, father, brother to return from that war. And they never returned. And no one ever told them. In fact, they would pay people. The people had businesses say, all right, we will give you a tag, and we'll put all these tags all over your body, because a body could be blown up. And we'll have to find this tag of a leg or a foot or something like that, or an arm, and we will go look. They would go look for that. So you pay this person a dollar and a quarter, which was a lot of money back then, and they would go out after that body, and they would look, and they would then go tell the family. That's the only way we find out, but if you couldn't afford that, they wouldn't know. So the governor is walking out across this field, and he sees all those dead bodies, and they haven't been buried, and he says, this is wrong. We have to do something. And so they called together a funeral, in reality. And so they invited the foremost speaker of the day up from New England. And he spoke for over 2 hours. And somebody said, well, look, we need to invite the president too. And they said, the president? Lincoln? I mean, that guy is so ugly. I mean, he looks like a horse, and he's those long legs, and he comes out on a mule, and his legs almost touch the ground, and he's a little bit wacko. Nobody likes him. The New York Times referred to him as the baboon at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. They were all kind, but somebody said, no, we've got to do it. And so he comes along and he gives this 2-minute speech talking about why they're there. And he begins this speech by saying, 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation. Now, why didn't he just say, 87 years ago, we had this, we started our nation? Why would that be? Because 87 years does not carry the theological concept, this eloquence of saying 47 years ago. This is a religious speech. It is a reference back to God. It is stating why we fought this battle. Why would we give our lives for this? This is almost like the Apostle Paul. Jesus Christ came, he started the Christian religion. And yet, here we come down the road several years later. And the Apostle Paul has the second awakening or the second coming of Christianity. Why? If Paul had not done that, Gentiles would not be a part of the church. We would still be another Jewish sect. So Paul brought it to the world. It is not related, it is not relegated to one political group. I hope that you recognize the value of Church of God International. You understand where this came from. You understand where we were, how we thought. And there were some brave souls that said, you know what? I can have a relationship with God and Jesus Christ without being a part of a particular political organization. Now, folks, that is not an easy thing to do. And the people who made that statement, who made that move, were people who had forethought and they understood something at the core of Christianity that is too easy to forget. So, he said, 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. That's what the Apostle Paul thought. That's the way he talked. July 4th, 1776, marks the beginning of our country. Now, why is July 4th, 1776? What's so important about that date? Why would that be the beginning of our country? You know, when our first president, George Washington was elected president, got a year? Somebody give me a year. 1789. We didn't even have a constitution until 1787. And yet 1776, we mark as the beginning of our country. Why? Because that was the date we established. This is what we believe. We declare freedom. We declare why we live, why we have a nation, why we came from other countries. There was no constitution. That was 1787. No agreement from the 13 colonies. No consensus from the citizens. We had not even won a significant battle of the Revolutionary War. And until George Washington got those guys in a boat and he crossed the Delaware, we really won no significant battles. That changed the tide to go over and take those Hessians and win a battle. What defines Church of God International? It's sort of odd that here I would come in, that you would even invite people to speak and to say, here's somebody who's looking at us and saying, what defines us? But I had to look at it years ago and said, you can be a Christian without being a member of this political church group. I don't have to be a Catholic. I do not have to go to you understand how contrary that is to Christianity. I must pay observance to the Pope or to some guy in Salt Lake City or somebody here or there or any place. It is a fundamental concept, and it's not an easy lesson to learn. The fact that you would even invite somebody like me here, it's a privilege to be here, that you would invite somebody says something. It's a testimony to the commitment that you have. Our fathers brought forth a new nation, and catch the phrase, conceived in liberty. The motif of birth runs through this speech. It's a painful experience. Was it worth it? Ask these ladies. Oh, yes. Do you want to go through it again? Well, no. But I wouldn't take anything for what I have gained from that. A new nation. Why is it new? It's something that has not existed since the judges judged Israel. No king. No mandatory income tax. All of the things they don't have without a central, not an army. And so they said, we got to be like other nations. We got to have an army. We got to have a source of income. We've got to pay these things. How are we going to do that? And God is saying, did I not bring you out of Egypt? Remember the history of what I did for you? Do you not think I can do that again? And their answer was, no. I don't think you can. And he said, okay, if you want a king, I will give you a king. What makes this country unique and new is that it was founded on freedom. You know what makes this church unique in the Church of God? It was founded on freedom. It is a good and grand idea, but it's new for the founding of countries and churches. When Jesus Christ spoke in Luke 4, he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." All of those things, opening up a person's mind to see this freedom for prisoners, people who are imprisoned, releasing the oppressed. Israel had been in and out of slavery all of their existence, and Jesus comes to say this is a central theme of the New Testament. Equality of human beings, that Paul could tell us neither Jew nor Greek nor male nor female were equal before God. This is a new thing. And it did not change, oddly enough, until the Black Plague came along. Ironically enough, the Black Plague, which took 50% of the population of this earth, and it was destroyed. A terrible event. How could that change this concept of equality of man? Well, think about who was ruling in the 14th century, the early 1300s. It was the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church had the priest who taught the schools. They determined who would be the prime ministers. The kings had to pay obeisance to the Pope. And so here's this Catholic monastery, and people are dying of the Black Plague, and what did the priest do? He goes out, and he is with those people who are sick. And he goes back to the monastery, and he spreads the Black Plague to everybody in that monastery. 90% of the people in the monasteries died. You know what that did to the educational system? Okay, I got to be really careful about making the comments that I'd like to make under these circumstances, but we do need a change in the educational system in our country. Okay. All right, that's close to what I'm going to get. Anyway, my wife was a school teacher. I was a school teacher. It changed the educational system. And then there was the feudalistic system. All right, I own, let's say, 30,000 acres. And I say, here's John Jones, my friend. All right, I'll give you 10,000 to manage. And this other friend, 10,000. Another friend, 10,000. Okay? Now, you hire the people, and so you had a baron and a lord and whoever was all the way down the line. But everybody was paying. You ever remember the old nursery rhyme? Ba-ba black sheep, have you any wool? Yes, sir, three bags full. One for my master. One for my slave. It was down the lane. Okay, I was thinking it was the dame. One for the dame. So you got this, I made this, and I got over here, and I got over here, and guess what's left for me? Very little. So when the Black Plague came along, so many people died. So we have a court hearing, and we say, who's going to get this land? Everybody died. And this other guy, this guy who's still living, says, well, I can't take it. I've got all I can take care of. I can't take care of it. Well, we'll let this guy who was at the bottom end of the totem pole, I use a pagan analogy, and he will take this land. So he takes the land. He produces. He was at the bottom. And now these people are saying, I need somebody to work for me. Look, I'll pay you double with that other guy. You know, you can have twice as much land. You can have twice. Not will it be one for the master and one for the dame, but it's going to be one for you first. Maybe half of it for you. And then we'll give to the Lord and the baron and all those others next. And so prices rose, or salaries rose. Free market. Capitalism began to be instituted. And the people who were the kings and the so on, those changed too, because some of those died. All right. Freedom. So when you come to Galatians, the 5th chapter, Jesus says, it is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by the yoke of slavery. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. In the history of the world, the clearest distinction between evil and good is that evil men attempt to enslave others, and good men attempt to make men free. There's a lot of economic philosophies that sound interesting, but they are contemptible. So he goes on, our fathers brought forth a new nation conceived. Again, this concept, conceived. Birth. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. In one sentence, Lincoln has defined why they are fighting this war. Now remember, we talked about a lady, a wife, a mother would send off her husband, her children to battle, and they wouldn't come back. And here's this grieving mother at home saying, why did we fight this battle? Why are we engaged? Why did I lose my husband? Why have I lost my children? In one sentence, Lincoln has answered that question. Testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. The Vietnamese War. Our politicians would send a group of people, men, young men, our best, our brightest, I was not among them, up to the top of the hill. Some would come down and some wouldn't. And they would come back and the enemy would take it and they would go up and take the hill again the next day, or the next week, or the next month. And so we here in America said, why? Why are we fighting that battle? They asked the same question. And Lincoln answered that question. This war pits American against American. We read the same Bible, said Lincoln. Baptist friends down the street, they read the same Bible I read. Different thoughts. We pray to the same God. And yet on a field in Gettysburg, 7,000 Americans killed each other. We are fighting this war so that this nation will live. And if we do not fight this war, something unique will pass from this earth. If people were taught this in colleges and schools today, that it's the last, as Reagan quoted, best hope for mankind. So, we are met on a great battlefield of that war, he goes on. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place. This is a funeral for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. So Lincoln has told again in one sentence why their loved one died and why this nation must continue. It is altogether, you know, let me add here. We take the hymn, Battle Hymn of the Republic. Now, Christians have changed the words there. The original said, as those soldiers were marching off into battle, he died to make men holy. Let us die to make men free. We don't sing it that way now. We sing, let us live to make men free. What is lost there? The connection to Jesus Christ. When those men marched off to that battle, they were saying, we are doing what Jesus Christ did. This was a very religious concept. This was a very theological. It was at the core of Christianity. We are acting like Jesus Christ acted. We are fighting for the same concept for which He gave His life. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. You ever look back at first century Christians? That people who have given their lives so that this nation, Jesus Christ did not write a book. His words were passed on to us by men who gave their lives so that you can read this book, His words. And they thought His words, His concept, His teachings were so valuable, they would say, kill me. It's happening again in other places of the world. It's coming to a theater near you, I'm afraid. Dedicate, consecrate, hallow. You dedicate a church. The prophet Samuel consecrated for service to God those things at that time. He is imbuing this struggle with the sanctity of religious principle. It's a religious war fought for the noblest of principles. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us. Get that. It is our obligation. They paid the full measure of their devotion. You get this? We look back on the centuries of Christians who gave their lives, who stood there when a sword was to their throat, and they gave everything so that we could know. This battle isn't over with. We have an obligation to pass on to future generations. We have an obligation to continue this. Sometimes you look around and you say, what is happening? This world's, I'm afraid to send my kids to school or to college. I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid of what's going to happen to, you know. It's too big a struggle. No, it is not. It is not. We have an obligation to those who went before us, including our Savior, to carry this message forward. They paid the full measure. Liberty, truth, is a responsibility, and at times, it is only paid for with blood. We've never done that. We haven't been called upon to do that. Hopefully it'll never happen here in Tyler, Texas. But it's happening someplace to some people sometime. That from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. What more can anybody do but die for something? And that, again, is a Christian concept. No greater love than you lay down your life for your brothers. I don't just pray for these. I pray for these who come afterward. That's you and me. And He was praying for us, and He was giving His life the night before He went to the crucifixion. This is where this concept developed. This concept that great men are not men who rule. Great men are men who sacrifice. And that from the beginning of the Scriptures all the way to the Revelation, it is sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice. And the greatest sacrifice is you lay down your own life. Isn't it wonderful to have servants who will come and do things and they do it without charge? They do it because of their heart. And this is where this concept came from Jesus Christ. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom. A new birth of freedom under God. Sometimes, you know what, we look around and we say, what's happened? What's happened to the Church of God? What's happened to Christianity? What's happened to people who believe? I was grateful that Jeff was showing me a map that Dan has created. It shows all the churches of the Church of God. You don't know all of them. I don't know all of them. It's like Paul. I want to go to this other city. God says, no. I got 7,000 people here. Or we have many people here. To Elijah, he said, there are 7,000 left. We just don't know, but God knows. But we here need to highly resolve that those who have gone before us have not suffered and sacrificed and died in vain. It was a privilege to know Ron Dart. I wish I could call him today and say, let's talk, Ron. I could kick myself sometimes for not calling him more often. I recall fondly these email conversations, telephone conversations, that we could discuss these things. They're gone. You know who's here? You are here. I'm here. We're the ones God is working with. And this message has to continue. We must highly resolve that they did not teach and die in vain. I know I can look back over these guys and I can say, you know, this guy did this. Oh, that was terrible. You know what? He did some good things too. And every human being is flawed. There is not one save Jesus Christ that is good. Let us look back on some of these men and remember the good things that they did and ask that God will be merciful to them and to us for the things they did wrong. This nation has got to have a new birth of freedom. Maybe we could say that the Church of God needs a new birth of freedom. I think I see it happening. Maybe the crowds aren't that large, but I'm telling you, there's some life breathed into this. There's something good happening. Under God, Lincoln would have said, I don't care what Aristotle says. I don't care what Cicero says, what the Roman jurors say. Slavery is never justified, is an affront to God. I don't care what the Pope says. I don't care what some other churches say. The Sabbath is based on freedom. The Sabbath is based on the 1,000-year period, the millennium. The Sabbath is based on my rest in Jesus Christ. There is no other day that says the Creator God but the Sabbath. We have a job to do, and we can't be dissuaded from it. That government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. As the war went on, Lincoln came to the idea that the Civil War was punishment from God for the sin of slavery. He said in his second inaugural, "We never dreamt that this war would be so costly. Fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray." Ever been to Springfield, Illinois, to go through the Lincoln Memorial? Somebody has. You walk through there, two people, three. You walk through there and read those speeches. You could give those speeches in the Church of God today. They are filled with concepts of God, belief. Sometimes I think this country had a more of a, well, the commitment to God by our founding fathers and some of those who have come. We were talking last night to Jeff that, you know, the basis for voting in our country. You know why the founding fathers said we ought to vote? Calvin Coolidge, on the 150th anniversary of the founding of the country, July 4th, gave a speech, and he said, it's because you were made, we were talking about it last night, you are made in the image of God, and nobody has the right to rule over you without your consent. So you vote. This is the person I want to be governor or president or mayor. I vote for this person. I will do. You know, we've got to have traffic lights. We've got to have rules. We've got to have laws. But I'm made in the image of God. But there's a penalty to be paid if we do what is wrong. This mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away, yet if God wills that it continue until all the wealth piled by the bondsman's 250 years of toil shall be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword, as was said 3,000 years ago. 3,000 years ago. So still it must be said, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. He may have been our most spiritual president. He may have been one of the three greatest statesmen to ever live. And he refounded our country on freedom. Freedom. This church was founded on the concept of freedom, that you are free, that you have the right to think for yourselves, that you don't have to have somebody tell you Sunday's the day to keep, Christmas is the day to keep, Halloween, all of those things, because you have a mind. And I don't care if all the scholars in the world. I went to a Methodist university. I listened to these Methodist scholars, and I walked out and I said, they don't believe in God. And that's where I came to the Church of God, because of these founding concepts. And you have the privilege of being a part of it from its beginning. Thanks for the privilege of being here. It's good to see all of you. Good old friends.